It's time for JT the Brick.
The main reason why I have the back of the Raider Nation, the main reason why I do this for a living, because of the global disrespect this franchise gets from people who are wrong more than they're right on the radio. The lazy national narrative is the Raiders don't have a quarterback. I mean, really? Yeah, well, the Raiders are one of the worst teams in football. I said, worst teams? They won 8 games.
JT the Brick.
That's why I love you in the Raider Nation. You don't like anything. You're hardcore Raider Nation. You don't like anything until it's proven to you. There are Raider fans in Vegas. There are Raider fans globally. There are season ticket holders. Okay? There's a whole bunch of different Raider fans, but we're all one nation. One nation, the Raider Nation. And we're all on the same page. We want to win. That is another unbelievable article on anti-Raider propaganda. The roster's better than last year.
And now,
Big Boy Radio.
Here's JT the Brick.
Yes, it's Big Boy Radio, JT with you. Good to have you today on the flagship of the Silver and Black, Raider Nation Radio, the Raiders mobile app, lvsportsnetwork.com. We appreciate you and my crew that's already in there on YouTube. And my crew on YouTube, there's going to be some good stuff for you coming up down the road, man. I feel like giving you my season tickets. I can't do that. Those tickets cost a lot of money, but I'm going to do something for you. Maybe we'll have a remote viewing party for the YouTubers, JT the Brick, YT. It's free. It's on YouTube. You see us behind the scenes. You see me in my home. You watch what we do here. And you can see that I'm doing it all right up here. There's no teleprompter. Teleprompter is a big word nowadays. In politics, teleprompter. You know, in sports radio, like 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago, the teleprompter came in because radio shows started going on TV, and then you saw the little shh, the little secret. The radio hosts, some of them don't watch sports, and the producers do, so they fill in the teleprompter, and they tell the host what to say. Here, we just let it fly. I will give you 2 hours of everything I got every day. And some days it's going to be pretty intense. Other days it's going to be light. We're in a light summertime here. Not a lot of drama, man. Look at what they're doing with Davante Adams from Netflix. That's the drama we have. You know all the Davante stuff was filmed last year? And people are just seeing it now and going, oh, he wants to trade. He wants to trade. No, everybody. They haven't played football this week. That's from last year where Josh McDaniels is gone. Jimmy Garoppolo is gone. I don't know, maybe there's some knuckleheads watching this and they think we're really playing football every week and Devontae's getting blown up and he wants out. It's incredible. Incredible from Dan Orlovsky, Mike Greenberg, Aaron Rodgers. Everybody just wants to know, can Devontae leave? Will Devontae go? What will happen? I don't know. I'm not playing that angle up. Unless there's smoke, then there's fire. And then I have something to really dig my teeth into and let you know about it on the radio. Until then, and I don't do a lot of that type of radio, I'd like to tell you some of the players I'd like to get. I can do 2 hours today on getting Dak Prescott next year. If they don't sign Dak Prescott in Dallas, okay, if they don't give him his contract extension, which I wouldn't. If I'm Dallas, I just let him play. I let it play out. I say, Dak, you're under contract. You don't want to come to camp. You want to get new money. I get it. You're really good. But I wouldn't pay him anymore. They've already paid him a lot. But we're in a time now where everybody's saying the same thing. You can't win. Maybe we're the best example here in Raider Nation. The best example. Well, the Raiders don't have a quarterback. Yeah, they do. They have two. And they're pretty good. They're pretty good. Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. They're not elite. They're not great. I don't think either one could put a team on their back and go win. But Joe Burrow's great, and he's always hurt. Jaden Daniels is really good. He's never played a game. We didn't get C.J. Stroud. That would have been pretty good trading up for him. And you look around the league, and the Cowboys have got to be now the focus of the league with Dak because he's due to make a lot of money. He's the face of the Cowboys. He's a very good player. Is Dak elite? Someone just texted me that. Right here on my phone. I'm not making it up. Is Dak elite? I hear you talking about Dak. Great question. Yeah, I'd put Dak in the elite category. Look, there's elite players that don't win Super Bowls, right? You're elite. Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Did you put him in the elite category? And Dan Marino's better than Dak Prescott. Don't get me wrong there, but Dak's really good. Tony Romo was really good. He didn't win a Super Bowl. But if Dak becomes available, the number one team they will talk about for Dak will be the New York Giants because they'll be getting rid of Daniel Jones. And it'll be the Las Vegas Raiders if one of these two quarterbacks that we have don't step up and play beyond their ability. What is beyond their ability? I don't know. Beyond their ability? Give me 30 touchdowns, under 20 interceptions. Less than that, be nice. But get the ball out. Make plays. Don't turn it over. If Christian Wilkins causes a strip sack with Max Crosby, don't screw it up. Get out there and run the plays that you ran in Henderson or Costa Mesa and run them well and get the ball in the end zone. I don't know anybody. I watched the review on Netflix of Devontae, and most of it was negative. It was the Raiders losing games. You know, they went out of their way not to give us everything on the 63-point performance. But Aiden O'Connell made some really good throws. And Gardner Minshew, all he does is beat the Raiders. Everybody around here should be familiar with Gardner Minshew. He closed down the Oakland Coliseum with a win, beat the Raiders here, and kind of put the dagger in them. So Gardner Minshew can play, but they're not at the level of Dak Prescott. They're not at the level of Patrick Mahomes. Now, speaking of that, before I get to our honorable mention game, this Patrick Mahomes stuff is just making me ill. It is. I can't avoid it anymore. The guy practically lives here. I'd live here if I lived in Kansas City. If I lived in Kansas City, I would be on every private jet to Vegas whenever I could, or Cabo, or Hollywood if I'm Patrick Mahomes, even though he built a golf course in his backyard. He's got all that money. But the big issue becomes he's everywhere in Vegas. All I'm hearing is about a shoe deal, promotions, this, that. Oh, Kelsey, the Swifties. Mahomes is doing this. Mahomes is at Big Ben in London. Mahomes, Mahomes, Mahomes. They're even, my wife watches the Today Show in the morning, which is fine. You know, Today Show's on, one TV. We got too many TVs on in the house. Kids don't shut off their Madden games, the college football game. I'm turning off fans like my dad did. I'm going into rooms, turning off lights and fans. I'm at that stage as a dad. And the Today Show, Jenna Bush, daughter of President George W. Bush, is in a Hallmark movie. She's out there filming it with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I walk by the TV and I looked at my wife. I go, really? And she's interviewing Andy Reid, and it's a Christmas scene. And even Hallmark, who has the same movie they make every year, some really hot divorced guy who looks like a 10, looks like Jimmy Garoppolo's divorced, and some beautiful middle-aged woman with kids falls in love with the guy, and they go sleigh riding, and it's a Hallmark movie every year around Christmas. And the Chiefs are the movie this year. And all we saw was the Kelce brothers in London, Paris, Amsterdam, wherever, with Taylor Swift. And that kind of comes into my world. So I'm looking at all this. I'm like, we got to stop the Chiefs, man. Hallmark movies now? I mean, can you imagine that if Derek Carr was here and he starred in a Hallmark movie? Oh, they're doing that with the Chiefs now because no one can stop them. The Raiders are the last team to beat the Kansas City Chiefs on Christmas Day. Speaking of the Hallmark Christmas movie, they should have made a movie on Antonio Pierce stealing Christmas from the Chiefs. I digress. Here's what we're going to do today. I got a show that's pretty packed, okay? Pretty packed overall as Bobby gives me the rundown. Our Nighthawks coach, Mike Davis, loves the show, loves the Raiders, and he took the Nighthawks here in Henderson to the playoffs. They have fan appreciation night on Friday. We'll talk to him next hour. A really nice woman who I like a lot, Amber Dixon. I've covered a lot of boxing with her. She now is the host of Nevada Weekly, a TV show here in Vegas, and they did a really nice roundtable on the closing of the Mirage Hotel. I'd like to take calls on that today, but it seems like everybody's on Raider vacation. Man, I'm rolling up my sleeves. I got my Stone shirt on today from Vancouver for those on YouTube. But the Mirage is closing. I'd like to tell a story or two. I'm off the rest of the week, Thursday, Friday, last show of the week. I'd like to hear from some fans in Vegas on the closing of the Mirage. I'll never forget my mom and dad outside the Mirage looking at the volcano. This is 30-plus years ago. And my mom and dad, I was living in San Diego, and we met in Vegas, and we got two rooms, and I was there and knew a couple people in town, but not a lot. It was before I moved here. And I remember going to Siegfried and Roy with my mom and dad. And I'm telling you, let me just tell you this. Siegfried and Roy will never happen again, ever, because you can never take a ferocious lion or tiger and put him in an open space with human beings. I was one of those people. I was in that room. And you know what happened to Roy of Siegfried and Roy afterwards. I can't even believe they allowed that. They had the dolphin habitat. I wasn't a big Mirage guy. I was a big Hard Rock and Palms guy. But many, many times friends were in from out of town and we'd meet at the pool. I'd be in the pool at the Mirage having a beverage and going to a great dinner at their steakhouse or whatever it was. I'm going to miss the Mirage. because the Mirage was a big glam. When the Mirage opened, and Steve Wynn, the genius, and I know he's had some personal transgressions, we know that, but when he opened up the Mirage, and Bobby, you know this, it was the biggest game changer of all time. He had it built in a Y, so he did that because he wanted everybody to be no less than 300 feet from an elevator or somewhere where they could get to dining or whatever. It was elegant, it was beautiful, and it made Vegas pop. And I'm telling you, after the Mirage, Bobby, that's when the rest of the Strip said, hey, man, we got to kind of clean up our act because look what Steve Wynn's doing. And then Steve Wynn went on, obviously, Bellagio. You look at what he did with Wynn, Encore, and all of that. And it started with those casinos before that, but that was the big blockbuster at the time.
Absolutely. That's the thing. A little bit of Vegas history. Mm-hmm. Back before the Mirage, I mean, the Strip was like Imperial Palace. Mm-hmm. You had Bally's. You had stuff like that.
Flamingo, Tropicana.
Right, but there was no such thing as the mega resort.
Yes.
Mirage was the first one. They had the volcano out front. Mm-hmm. They had the dolphin show. They had the whole zoo going on back there.
Yeah, the zoo back there.
You know, great. They did a fantastic job with that, and that was the benchmark that all the other casinos
I agree.
Went
it, was,
to.
It was the benchmark, and I'll tell you, when they put Beatles Love up there, and I saw Beatles Love maybe four or five times every time I walked out of there. That was great. And for the people who saw the last couple of Beatles Love performances really enjoyed it. And then Danny Gans. I saw Danny Gans once. Danny Gans was one of the greatest performers I've ever seen. The one-man show he put on, oh, my God, he left us way too soon. Rest in peace to Danny Gans. But old Strip, new Strip, and now everything's new. We got the Fountain Blue, our proud partner, Resorts World. You know, we got a lot of great casino properties here. They're imploding Tropicana, and that's the way it is. You know, you got to evolve, and Vegas is able to do that. So if you got anything you'd like to add on the Mirage, 702-365-9200. Vinny Bonsignor at the bottom of the hour, so we'll wait for Vinny at 12:30. And then here it is, the game. This is our last game in our honorable mentions. And Bobby put a lot of work into this. I think we all did. And our final game before we get into the real top 10, and I left out, I know, six or seven other games I could have put in the honorable mentions, but please give us credit for whittling this down. Today's game will be December 26, 1976, as the Raiders beat the Steelers to advance to their first Super Bowl. Okay, why is this an honorable mention? Because I have 10 other games that I'm going to put up there. It was really close. You know, there was AFC championship games along the way. There were wild card victories along the way. So this is a wild card. If you're upset and said this should be number 7 or 8, I get it. I get it. We're not apologizing, but we kind of am. I just can't include. The Raiders had probably, when we counted, 41 games we considered. 41 games. We have our top 10 and about 14 or 15 honorable mentions, 12 we did on this show. So it hasn't been exhausting, but this will be the last one on the post-Christmas day in 1976 against the Steelers, who beat the Raiders often back then, and the Raiders needed this victory to advance. So I'm going to dive into that here in a little bit. But we got Vinny here. I'm trying to figure it out how to thread this needle today. So that's the show as we open it up. The All-Star game was last night. Let's get to the Ohtani home run. I think this is what an All-Star game is all about. One of the greatest players of all time on the big stage of the All-Star game going deep.
Houck's next pitch on the way. Ohtani drives this one to right. Soto doesn't move. He looks over his shoulder, and 12 rows deep it lands. A three-run home run for the superstar Shohei Ohtani.
That's MLB Radio on the call, ESPN on the call, and then a lot of the other guys who played in this game, you never heard of. You never heard of these guys. Everybody needed a program last night. Who are these guys? Well, if you follow baseball like I do for a living, I know pretty much all of them, but I couldn't pick them out in a lineup. If they walked in here right now and took off their cap, I wouldn't know who they were. 37, I think, was the number of new All-Stars there. Major League Baseball does a terrible job of promoting everyone other than Ohtani and Judge. That's it. That's all they promote here. But the Duran two-run homer was the difference in this game. I'm an American League guy, and the American League wins.
Here's a high fly ball off of the bat of Jaren Duran. That one will leave the yard and give the American League its first lead of the night.
So that was a big home run there. And final call, as the American League, which we've seen over the last decade or so, has been the dominant force at the MLB All-Star Game.
Rossi is ready. 0-2, swing and a miss, and that'll do it. Rossi closes it out. The American League and Bruce Bochy win the 2024 All-Star Game by a final score of 5-3.
5-3, the final there on ESPN Radio, MLB on the call. So that's where we are with that. Used to be, no matter what channel I was on, no matter where I was on anywhere, living anywhere, I would have 9 calls on hold after the All-Star Game. I don't plan on hearing from anyone on it today, which is kind of sad because I like to talk All-Star Game, see if you watched it. Did you have the kids over? Did you have a pool party and let the kids run around, have ice cream, and watch the All-Star Game? If we lose these traditions, okay, if we lose these traditions and we lose it because kids only have the capacity to look at videos for 2 minutes and they're scrolling through the 2 minutes because they can't focus on the content, we're done. Why do you think I'm going to YouTube now? And my son's cutting up some like 90-second reels because I guess no one can pay attention for 5 hours a day anymore. They used to be able to do it. If you can't sit in front of your television and watch the Major League Baseball All-Star Game from the first to the ninth inning, we got a problem. We do. We got a problem in sports. Oh, it's a better time. No, it's not. It's not better than watching the 1977 All-Star Game. This is not better. Are you kidding me? Now, some sports are better. Other sports are better. The WNBA is better. You never watch the WNBA, then Mark Davis buys the Aces, and they're going for a three-peat. And they got Asia Wilson, and now people are watching Caitlin Clark and Asia Wilson. You never watch that. You never watch the WNBA with an N, never. Now we are the focal point of the story, thanks to Mark Davis here in Vegas. But man, oh man, I can't believe what's going on. It's a Major League Baseball All-Star Game. They destroyed the Hockey All-Star Game, destroyed it. It's a skills contest. Football, they turned into a long drive golf challenge and touch football. That's gone. And the NBA is awful. So, right, Bobby? I mean, they destroyed all the games. So there's no more All-Star games other than this. A low-scoring game last night came down to a dramatic home run.
You know, I got to tell you, I watched the game last night. I had a good time watching it.
Yeah, sure you did.
You know, I mean, I'm not a big guy on the uniforms. I wish they went back to the old where they had their home and road uniforms or whatnot. But it was a decent game. It was competitive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a pretty decent game.
Yes, and next year they have to go back to wearing your team's uniform.
That would be
none of this
better.
All-star much, pajamas. Much none of these pajamas and these beer league softball jerseys. Get it out. Get it out. I don't care. Major League Baseball wants to sell that. Get that out any way you can. I don't want to hear about that anymore. It just drives me crazy. And then the last thing I wanted to hit on quickly is just tell a quick story about yesterday. And I tweeted it out at JT the Brick on X. I'm still saying Twitter, as you know, but yesterday my heart was full yesterday. I was a panelist. I led two panels yesterday at CCON, which is a sports and business conference that was at our proud partner, Virgin Hotels. And one of the panels that I was on had two former iconic athletes in different ways. One was a guy by the name of Blaze Winner. He played 9 years in the NFL. Okay, played for the Chargers, the Colts. He had a nice career, really nice career, but he was born with a cleft palate. He had a hole in his mouth when he was born. And he had a lot of problems in life. I mean, a lot of problems this guy had in life. And he came from a household that was enthralled in domestic violence. And his mom, as he was a little kid being bullied, his mom basically took him to the football field and said, go play football. And really, that's what she did. And she says, you're going to go play football. And he turned out to have an unbelievable, really good career. Not a Hall of Famer, not a multiple Pro Bowl, but now he's a motivational speaker. And he was one of it. And then the other gentleman on the dais was Dave Hansen from the movie Slapshot, one of the Hansen brothers. What a story he had. The guy's playing minor league hockey, and then all of a sudden, one of the player's sister writes a screenplay about this minor league hockey team. And they get Paul Newman to star in it, who's the biggest star in the world. And then Slapshot. So I went back and watched Slapshot in preparation of the speaking engagement to interview him. And, man, if you haven't seen Slapshot back in 1977, you want to talk about cutting-edge movie. Right up there with Animal House at the time. This is coming off Rocky winning the Academy Award, and that's late 70s. And you see this movie, Slapshot, you can't even believe they got it in the movie theater. And then almost 50 years later, this guy, Dave Hansen, still going and signing autographs. So as my son and I were there yesterday, I walk into one of the rooms, and there's Pete Rose, the all-time hit king. and not to get too emotional, but Pete's getting up there. Pete's really getting up there, but he looked great. And he was doing an interview with a friend of mine, Rick Horrow. And it was done, and I walked up to Pete, and he saw me. He calls me Bricker. Bricker, what's happening? Hey, Pete, this is my son. And he got up, shook my son's hand. We took a photo, and he had nice things to say, and it was really cool. Full circle for me. I started off as a stockbroker. I won the Jim Rome Smack Off. I left as a stockbroker, moved to Vegas, and my big break was co-hosting the Pete Rose Show, which I did for a year. And our dear friend Dave Koken, who's going through a really tough time now, he was the host of that show at 1.2. So it was really nice to see Pete yesterday. And as I've told you lately, I hope Pete lives another 30 years. But I said the same thing about Jim Brown the last time I saw him. And I don't remember saying goodbye to Jim Otto because I thought I'd see Jim this year, right? And Jim's not going to be back. So it was really nice to have that moment yesterday when I told my wife about it and I put it in a group text to my dad. And very, very, very special day yesterday seeing Pete Rose. I don't know how many times I'm going to have him on again. He came on after Willie Mays died, but I just wanted to share that with everybody. It was pretty cool yesterday to do that. So we got the game. We're going to get to Vinny, and then after Vinny, we'll do the game. And then I got some interviews coming up the next hour of the show. We're brought to you by PT's. As you know, they have the best happy hour in town. I think over 70 taverns now. I want to get clarification on that. I mean, I started with them. They had 30 taverns, then they had 50, then they had 60, and I think it's at 70. So wherever you go in this great valley, you will see a PT's. Everywhere. You're on a freeway, you're at the corner, you'll find a PT's. They fuel the monologue 5 to 7, midnight to 2. It's the best happy hour in town. And the game we have today, the Raiders finally get over the hump, downing the Steelers after losing straight AFC championship games, the last two to the Steelers, who went on to win the Super Bowl. So when we come back, we'll get into that. Vinny Bonsignore is going to join us coming up, and we'll get to all of this here as we get rolling. I'm excited today. And then tomorrow I'm going on a golf trip. Isn't that cool? What I wanted to do at this stage of my life, go on golf trips with my buddies and play golf and drink Modelos. I have a bucket of Modelos on my golf cart. You better believe that. Been hitting them better lately. So I'm looking forward to that and getting out of this heat, man. I keep telling you, get out of this heat for a while if you can.
Well, I think with anything, right, let's say he's running back A or B, however you want to look at it, it's just the physical demand of playing that position for 17 games, right? Let's say he's up in the 200, 300 carries. I don't know. But let's just say he's up there. That's going to be the most he's had in a long time. So how he take care of his body, what he does over the next 5 weeks. You saw when he came in his offseason. Oh, he looked right. He's built right. He's a strong, powerful man. But then also just understanding that just because you got the job now, that it can't be taken. Alex Mattison, really good football player. And that's why I'm going to keep going about our team. These guys got to step up, but it's just not on Zamir. It's everybody. And Kalak has done a really good job of really pushing competition, pushing those guys. Hey, listen, you have a bad play, next man up mentality. So Zamir understands this. So don't get comfortable. And I think he's done a really good job of that.
Turn it up. Yes, turn it up. Fired up. So is Coach Pierce. He pulled me aside at the golf tournament, Raiders golf tournament, and told me to get ready for that Charger game. I'm ready for it, and I'll be ready for it in Costa Mesa as we begin our programming there next Tuesday. So I'll be in Costa Mesa Tuesday to Friday, the following week, Tuesday to Friday. I'm back hosting Mad Dog Sports Radio Sunday and Monday, Monday night from the Wynn. And I'm just going to be driving and flying back to Costa Mesa to do some live shows. Again, you know, we're on from noon to 2, and practice is from 10 to noon. So we should have some nice turnouts there. And there'll be some Southern California fans that'll have the right to be there, the season ticket holders. And I think we're going to provide some really good content because the Raiders and Coach Antonio Pierce wants to have the players on. It seems like he wants to have the players on the radio more than the former regime. And it's okay. Some coaches want players to come on and don't. I'm all right with that. Whatever they give us, we'll take. But I can promise you, Antonio Pierce is not getting in the way. He's encouraging us to talk to his players and get the word out on his team. I mean, never more so than now, considering all the anti-Raider propaganda that's out there. Vinny Bonsignor joins us, our teammate here on the radio and from Vegas Nation and the Review Journal. Vinny, I think you and I are the two most qualified guys, along with Q and Clay, to talk about Devontae liking it here in Vegas. And now a Netflix documentary, which was mostly filmed last season, has the national media all in a buzz because they think Devontae is feeling the same way he felt last year when he was getting knocked to the ground because of Jimmy G.
If people out there understand the whole concept of calendars and time and how time moves on and when things were actually filmed, the time of year that it was being filmed, so a lot has changed since the
Let's get Vinny on it. Let's get Vinny on a clean line. Vinny's probably out in deep, deep, deep Henderson, as I like to say. You know, I'm a Summerlin guy. They got to build some deeper towers out there in deep, deep, deep Henderson, man, so we can get it all good on a clean line. So as Vinny was just saying, it's obvious that the Netflix documentary was filmed last season when the Raiders got beat in Detroit and Devontae couldn't catch a ball because Jimmy couldn't get the ball to him. And there was a lot of that going on last year, and I didn't realize it until I watched this Netflix series how hard Devontae took so many hits across the middle, and then there was a big, big soundbite from Devontae, a really big one about, you know, getting killed going over the middle of the field. I got to get out of here because he was getting hit. He was getting lit up a lot. Was that exclusively because Jimmy G was leading him to the middle of the field and not getting him the ball at the right time at the right place? Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy G shouldn't have been able to do that. Jimmy G should have been better. I thought that the offense led by Josh McDaniels was very vanilla. It was very predictable. And on top of that, they want to feed Devontae as we come back to Vinny. And, you know, Vinny, Devontae, I didn't realize until I watched the Netflix series, he took a lot of big hits last year. I understand why.
Yeah, I saw it at Chargers game, and there were about three or four, maybe five hits that each.
Okay, we're going to do this. We'll do, Vinny, we'll do this a different day. We got to get Vinny on the line. This is not going to work, and it's not Vinny's fault. It's not Vinny's fault at all. We'll reschedule with Vinny. We'll reschedule with Vinny, and we'll do it at another time and another date here. And that's, you know, that's not Vinny's fault. That's the cell service that's out there, Bobby. Bobby, let's move on. If it's not working, it's not working. It's live radio. Doing this 27 years. If the phone's not working, it's not on Vinny. Let's get to this as we are into our honorable mentions. It's the final one as we get going. What game is it? Here it is.
We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
He is going to get inside the bar. Touchdown.
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Honorable mention.
Our final honorable mention. It's December 26, 1976. The Raiders win the AFC Championship. They finally get over the hump on a hazy post-Christmas day in 1976. There was one more gift awaiting. One of the two talented teams, and those two teams had the best rivalry of the entire decade, and that says a lot because there were great teams playing in the 70s. The Raiders and the Steelers squared off for the third straight time in the AFC Championship game, played in Oakland. Pittsburgh won the previous two and went on to win the Super Bowl. Raiders owned the best winning percentage over the past decade and finally got past Pittsburgh in a dominating game, 24-7, and went on to capture their first Super Bowl win. The fourth straight AFC title game for the Raiders. They lost to Miami in 73, Pittsburgh in 74 and 75, and finally won in 1976. The Raiders went on to beat the Minnesota Vikings 32-14 in Super Bowl XI. Oakland built a comfortable 17-7 first-half lead off a 39-yard Errol Mann field goal in the first quarter and two touchdowns in the second. The Raiders scored their first touchdown after linebacker Willie Hall intercepted a Terry Bradshaw pass at the 26-yard line and returned it. Clarence Davis carried it in for a 10-0 Raiders lead. Then Pittsburgh put together its only formidable drive of the game. The Steelers marched 75 yards on 8 plays, capped off by a 3-yard touchdown run by Reggie Harrison to narrow it to 10-7. So even this game, the Raiders are in a tough spot. Tough spot because they're at a point now where, hey, they're a better team and they're in a tight game. But the Raiders responded on a 14-play, 69-yard drive topped off by a 4-yard touchdown pass from the Snake. Ken Stabler, the backup tight end, Warren Bankston. The game's final tally came in the third quarter when Stabler hit running back Pete Banaszak with a 5-yard touchdown pass to put the Raiders ahead by the winning score 24-7. In fact, Oakland appeared in all but two AFL-AFC championships since 1967. But played in only one Super Bowl. I mean, think about that. They lost Super Bowl II, 33-14 to the Packers. So this game was very important as it got going with a punt block as we look at the play-by-play of this game.
No running into the kicker, and the Raiders had the ball on the 38-yard line. They nearly had the punt block. Walden went down, but they said no running into the kicker. Hubie Ginn got in there.
Yeah, big play there. And Errol Mann, remember, very reliable. This is a name that goes down in Raider history, all the big attempts and the conversions back in the day.
It's up, and it is good. Right through the middle. Oakland scores first. 3:21 remaining in the first period. On Mann's 39-yard field goal.
Now, let me stop for a second here. Raiders go up 3-0. I talked to the great Raider Mort about this game, who was at the game. And he said you could cut the tension with a knife over the air at the Coliseum. Remember the Sugar Bear Hamilton game in the divisional playoffs where the Raiders could have lost. Then the Raiders get to host this game, and no one was comfortable in that ball game in the fans until late in the game. This was a tight game. Then the Willie Hall interception was a big moment in the contest.
Second down and 11. From the hands of Quincy Fuqua, and the Raiders have the ball, and their defense is their shining light right now.
Frenchy Fuqua, as we remember Frenchy, part of the Immaculate Deception there. Big interception for Willie Hall, then Clarence Davis with this touchdown run gave the Raiders a 10-0 lead.
Davis, touchdown, Clarence Davis goes in.
One fight going down there.
Look at this.
Well, it's early, folks.
That was Vella and Lambert going at it.
Isn't it great to hear John Vella's name? Love John Vella, man. It's been too long since that. John Vella, what a great Raider he was. Pittsburgh scored on a touchdown, and then we moved to Stabler to Bankston, a name you don't hear that often in great Raider history.
Stabler's going to pass it.
He's got it wide open.
And the tight end, they've used that play before to Dave Casper, and he's always wide open on that play. That time, it was Warren Bankston for the touchdown.
That gave the Raiders in this game some breathing room, up 17-7 at home. And then as I talked to Mort about it, he said even then they didn't believe it because of the Immaculate Deception and all the losses to the Steelers. No lead was safe. And if you look at Franco not playing in the game and who wasn't available from Pittsburgh, it was a big deal because that was not an excuse from Pittsburgh, but the Raiders had injuries and the Steelers had some high-profile injuries. One of my favorite players of all time is Pete Banaszak. I've gotten to know him well, went and visited him in Florida. He was one of the all-time most productive Raider offensive players ever.
Second and 5 for an Oakland touchdown. A play action. Look out. Favors pass. Touchdown. Once again, Banaszak slipped out of the backfield. Pete Banaszak, the veteran.
And him hit Stabler, and he is down.
Stabler was hit.
They really got him.
He let the ball go, and Madden's complaining about his quarterback being hit.
Well,
Madden, the head coach in the blue with his arms and his hips.
You could see it coming, Kurt.
Well, Kurt Gowdy on the call there. Stabler got rocked on that play. Snake took a lot of hits. Quarterbacks took a lot more hits back then than they take today. That's for sure. Then the final call as finally the Raiders get it done, winning at home, advancing to the Super Bowl.
Bradshaw down to 3-2. This is the last play of the game. Lynn Swann has it. And Lynn Swann.
Hackett just grabbed him by the head.
That's the game, and it's the Raiders of Oakland, the Vikings of Minnesota in the Super Bowl.
NBC on the call with Kurt Gowdy. So those are the highlights, and that's a recap of the game. And really important, you know, beat Terry Bradshaw and the Steelers offense and advance to the Super Bowl. As seconds ticked away, as you heard down the stretch, the fans of the Silver and Black stormed the field to celebrate the win of their team, which was a big one. 2 weeks later, the Raiders in Minnesota beat the Vikings at the Rose Bowl to win the Super Bowl. We'd like your reaction to this game. This isn't a class project. This isn't, you know, chemistry class. It's sports radio. If you remember that game, if you were alive during that game, if you understand the significance of that game, and really, for me, the significance of this game is that the Raiders could breathe. They could breathe because I don't know what would have happened to Madden. If they would have lost another championship game, I'm not indicating that Mr. Davis would have fired John Madden, one of the greatest coaches of all time. But, you know, Marv Levy didn't get fired immediately after losing 4 Super Bowls, right? They went to the Super Bowl. You don't fire coaches who do that. But if Madden didn't get past the Patriots in the Sugar Bear Hamilton game, the late hit, and they didn't go back to the Super Bowl, I don't know. I mean, that's something that there's not a lot of people left to ask about that because it's a really a bizarre question. What would have happened to John Madden? I do not know. But he won that game. I remember the picture of him in his locker. The quote, we're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to the Super Bowl. Madden doing that, sitting in a locker, and just you could see the emotion flooding over him. And for the Oakland Raider fans from back there, from the original fans of 1960, to finally get to the Super Bowl, as we talked about all the AFC championship game losses, it's pretty incredible that they lost that because they won the AFL-AFC championships in the past. They won the championship in 67. But that was the AFL, and they went on to lose Super Bowl II. It's a long way from Super Bowl II to Super Bowl XI. And to see how many championship games the Raiders lost is really important. Here's why it's really important, because overall, you have to have this conversation. I've had it with hundreds of Raider fans. The Raiders should have at least 5 to 6 Super Bowls because of the 70s. I'm not talking about the 90s and getting blown out in Buffalo. I'm not talking about losing the Super Bowl when Barrett Robbins didn't show up. I'm just talking about this area of Raider history that we covered. They lost to the 72 Dolphins, the undefeated team. Okay, Super Bowl IV should not have been Len Dawson in Kansas City. It should have been the Oakland Raiders. They beat them twice that year, but they lose and Len Dawson goes on to win a Super Bowl. If you looked at the Steelers, the Immaculate Deception, Raiders Super Bowl waiting for them. You look at the Tuck rule. I really believe the Raiders would have won the Super Bowl the year the Patriots did, Tom Brady's rookie season, during the Tuck rule. So now we're getting up to 7 or 8 Super Bowls for the Raiders. But follow me here for just one moment. Let's just say in the 70s, going to the championship games that they did, and the 4 here that we mentioned, they win 2 out of the 4. That's it. I'm not asking them. They won every championship game. No, they lost to good teams in the AFC championship game and the AFC playoffs. But let's imagine if the Raiders took care of business and won the games they were supposed to as the best team in the 70s. I think we'd be sitting back here instead of 3 Super Bowls, comfortably at 5, before I even get into the 90s and the 2000s. And now they've been in a rut for a long time. It's been a really big playoff rut. For a long, long time, man. Really long time. Since the last AFC championship game, which you can kind of figure out what games we have left. So we're going to go over our list of honorable mentions again, and then maybe some quirky geek Raider fan, it's a compliment, some geek Raider fan can go, ooh, he didn't mention that game, so that maybe that's in the top 10. Because you know the games that we mentioned if you've been listening along. Out to Connecticut, saved Raider. Start us off. What's happening?
Yeah, that game was so important to Al Davis, so impactful that, beating the Steelers finally, getting over the hump 24-7, that he put that score on the Super Bowl ring after mm-hmm. they beat the Vikings. So in case didn't know that, I just wanted to throw that out there. That's all I got for right now, JT. God bless the Raider Nation.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Good to hear someone who brought up a nice part of that. Yeah, to take that score and to put it on the ring, that meant a lot to him. Not a lot to him also. Ray Guy in that game. There are a lot of Raiders who played a long time. You know, I try to talk to Fred Biletnikoff almost every day. And Fred Biletnikoff played in Super Bowl II and was the MVP of Super Bowl XI. Just look from Super Bowl II, the loss, and go all the way to Super Bowl XI, the win. Raiders won a lot of games in between Super Bowl II and Super Bowl XI. And they finally ended up winning their first Super Bowl. And we all know that the first Super Bowl they won will be in our top 10. That will be in our top 10 for sure, and we'll dive into that. I hope you're enjoying what we're doing here, because you're not going to hear those sound bites anywhere unless you're watching a Raider documentary. And I want to thank the Raiders and Bobby and everybody working together to get us the sound that we've been asking for. And I like the Kirk Gowdy sound. You know, a little bit, you know, you got to listen closer. Okay, the technology is a little bit different back then. But I remember growing up as a kid in New York, and when the late game on, and when the Raiders came on in the late game, and Kirk Gowdy was on the call, or Charlie Jones after that over the years, and I'm sitting there as a kid. And again, I wasn't saying as a kid I was a Raider fan. I was a Stabler fan back then. A young boy with the Stabler jersey on, documented. I remember those sun-drenched games as I was freezing as a little boy back home in Long Island, and there's snow outside, my dad shoveling, and the late game was normally the Raider game. And, man, you look and you see the sun out in Oakland and games like that. That is our final game. That's our final honorable mention. Excuse me. Now we'll come back on Monday and we'll start our top 10. And that'll be interesting. That'll be interesting as we put that group together. All right, coming up, we have a couple of guests going to join us. I'll stay here on YouTube for a little bit longer. If anybody else has got something to say or want to jump in our YouTube break room, that's what I call it, the break room. Brought to you by the DeCastroverde Law Group. Hey, if you live in Vegas or anywhere in Vegas around here, you know you need an attorney. You need one, especially an accident attorney if you get injured. The brothers win. The brothers have your back. Alex and Orlando DeCastroverde.
I mean, obviously, the end result was awesome, but, I mean, I think a lot of us still have a weird feeling in our mouth because, I mean, we really didn't play the football the way we wanted to play all year long, and it wasn't fun. I mean, every single week having to try to just continue to get better and better and results not paying off the way you wanted to, it wasn't a lot of fun, and we have a lot of those same guys back.
Crank up the Grateful Dead, not Dead & Company. This is the Grateful Dead, not Dead & Company. Make that clear. But I enjoyed the two Dead & Company shows I've been to. Man, they're fun. A lot of fun. Now the Eagles are coming next. And the Eagles feel like a really big money grab. Man, I like the Eagles a lot, but from what I'm seeing from those tickets, that is a big money grab, man. They are going big on the price of that ticket, man. Good luck trying to get in for that one. Saw a column today here online it was kind of cherry-picked and went all around, so I just looked at it, the Raiders' depth chart heading into training camp, and it's pretty accurate. Quarterback Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. You got Anthony Brown and Carter Bradley, which is fun for Coach Bradley, Gus Bradley's son, but Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. Running backs, Zamir White, Alexander Mattison, Amir Abdullah, and Dylan Lauby. I like that running back room. I really do. I think the big test will be Dylan Lauby or Amir Abdullah. We'll see what happens in camp. They're both good players, but Lauby, I think, is going to have more upside and a much higher ceiling than Abdullah, who's a good player. Wide receiver room, I think, is one of the best in football. I really do. Led by Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, Trey Tucker, Michael Gallup, Jalen Guyton. You go down that list here, DJ Turner, Tulu Griffin. You know, so the receivers that they keep every year, 5 to 6 wide receivers, Devontae, Jacoby, Trey Tucker. It'll be interesting to see Michael Gallup and get a chance to see him. Love the tight end room. It's young, but I think it's going to be great. Bowers and Michael Mayer, Harrison Bryant, Zach Gentry, but I think it's going to be Bowers and Mayer. They'll carry one more. Offensive line's good. defensive line, man, it is good. It's not elite. It's not great. Led by Colton Miller, Dylan Parham, Andre James, Jackson Powers Johnson, and Thayer Mumford still at right tackle. Remember, I like Thayer Mumford because I hung out with him a few times recently, but I'll say this again on the record. Through former regimes, this regime, the regime before, the Raiders have not secured the right tackle position with a star. And Thayer Mumford is earning his ability to play more and more at this time. He's earning more reps. And Thayer Mumford is developing into a nice player. I like the depth of DJ Glaze, Dalton Wagner, Jordan Meredith, Cody Whitehair. You look at who they have on this team. The Raiders have some good backup offensive linemen. They do. I like the depth. I like the offensive line room. The only change I think that they could always look at is getting an elite right tackle. But Thayer Mumford seems like everyone's happy with him and he'll be the guy. The defense, Max Crosby, Christian Wilkins, John Jenkins, Malcolm Kuntz leading the defense. Tyree Wilson will be there. Adam Butler, Byron Young. I don't know who Byron Young is. I mean, I know who he is. I've interviewed him. He's got to wake up. He's got to get going here, man. He's got to play at a level that is worthy of that third-round pick. We'll see how it plays. Tyree Wilson is the X factor. How many reps is he going to get? That means John Jenkins is not going to get those reps because I think Malcolm Kuntz deserves to be there with Divine Diablo, Robert Spillane, Luke Masterson. Then they need another corner, in my opinion. You got Jack Jones, Brandon Faison. Who else? Safeties, Trayvon Merrigan, Marcus Epps. Slot corner, Nate Hobbs, Ja'Corian Bennett at corner, Richardson, Devin Shire. Defense is good. I still think they'll add another piece. I really do. Back for hour number two next.